Afternoon, friends. This is Carolyn Evers. I'm just delighted to be here with you today. If you read the information that I had on the site, you'll notice that we're talking about ley lines again, but we're doing a little bit more than that. We're hoping to inspire you in such a way that you will remember a time back in the ancient past when your third eye was open, when you could see the energy as it came from the cosmos and interacted with the energies from Mother Earth. And if you were trained and you listened real hard, you could actually hear the lines of energy as they traversed across the landscape. And so this is what we're going to be doing today. We're going back to a time in the ancient past when you remembered this. Not only did you remember it, but perhaps you worked with it. And so if you feel that you might want to tap into that again today, we're going to do something which is going, we hope, trigger some of these memories. Now, what might happen is, across the third eye, as you're starting to remember this, you might see a line that almost looks like Morse code. It's dashes and dots. Don't be concerned. That is just triggering into this line of memory that we're talking about. We're all individuals, and so you may not see that. You might see something in the third eye which looks like compartments, that they would appear as a honeycomb. And this changes. It almost reminds you of a Gothic cathedral. If you know what the rose window looks like, the compartments inside of that rose window holding the pieces of glass, it might look like that and be like a kaleidoscope and change. Or you might not notice anything, but you might be able to revisit this time in your dreams. What I'm doing is, I'm going to read a section from a book called The Sun and the Serpent. And the serpent is not a serpent as we think of it. It is the lines of energy that snake across the planet. And so the ancients had signs representing this, and they would show pictures of the serpent, but they were really talking about these energy lines. And we talked about these in the past, the Michael Mary lines in England, and of course we have them in many other places in the world too. But these lines we know a lot more about because Hamish Miller and Paul Broadhurst has written several books about it. And Hamish Miller is a remarkable individual who has worked with these lines by way of dowsing. And I just love this book, The Sun of the Serpent. I have read it several times. And in the very beginning, he has a section that's called Strange Alchemy. And this is what I'm reading from. It's not a long passage, but I'm reading this because it sets a tone. And what I have learned about triggering memories in my own life has been that things that are associated with a past memory, when you work your way through the association, many times it triggers the past memory. It's something like, if you are familiar with this, there are people who teach individuals how to remember things. They might give you a list of 10 unrelated words, and you're to use your skill to remember these 10 words in the sequence so that you'll never forget those 10 words. Well, how they do it is they connect each one of those words to some other word that triggers that. And they might form those trigger words in a sentence or paint pictures, very brilliant pictures, word pictures in the mind that helps you to remember those 10 words that you were to memorize. And so I look upon that as memory by association. And in my own life, many times in the past, this is how I have remembered things in my past lifetimes, has been through association. And that is why I'm reading this, because I am hoping that you will remember this time through the association of this beautiful picture that Hamish Miller has painted for us on these pages. And there's, I believe, some energetics behind it that might help you to remember. Also, we are in an age now where so many that I might say it is like a mist now between the two dimensions. It's thinning. And so we are having a much easier time now bringing in information from the other side, such as memories, such as reading from records, such as tuning into the energy auras on the planet. And it is because of the manner in which the Earth is growing right now. We are moving to a point of a gargantuan jump in spiritual information, and we as spirits are who house a soul are in line for this great advancement. And so we're going to be remembering a lot of these things. At first, when memories start, it can be a little unnerving, but just sit back and accept the fact that this is all natural. We are all very powerful beings who work with thought. We not only create our future with our thoughts, but we can also change the past with our thoughts. And what I mean by that is past traumas that we have lived through and remember on a subconscious basis. And so settle back in your chair. Hopefully you've got a time that's uninterrupted right now. And if you do have an interruption, there's always the archive. Bless the archive. So we're going to settle back in our chair, and we're going to be going back in time. We're even going to be going back further than the time when that beautiful babe was born in Bethlehem that we know of as Jesus Christ or Yeshua. We're going to be going back further and further, even beyond that period of time. We're going to be going back in the ancient past, and this is where we're going to meet as a group. And now I'm reading from Hamish Miller's The Sun and the Serpent. Under a glistening starlit sky, the shadowy landscape waits. A mist rises from the ground, swaths the old stones in low, swirling clouds. Groups of figures silently glide through the twilight toward the megaliths and sculptured earth, illuminated by the thin light of a crescent moon. They gather at special places, Silbury, Windham Hill, the sanctuary. Since the last new moon, pilgrims have trod the ancient ways to this place. From the far corners of the land, they have followed in the footsteps of the gods, who, according to tradition, marked out the old sacred paths in the earliest days, blessing them with a divine significance. After visiting the shrines and centers of their ancestors, they approach the great temple with a sense of timeless continuity. The countryside has become alive, its arteries pulsing with human energy dedicated to the coming celestial event. Every heart, every mind is directed towards the temple and to the fiery orb of the sun, hidden from sight by the body of earth as it dances its eternal spin through space. There is a profound hush over the land. everything happens in silence. Crowds of pilgrims assemble around the old stones, pouring from groves and hilltop camps to surround the sacred circle. A great energy begins to build, uniting everyone with its vibrant spirit. Senses are sharpened, everyday perceptions transcended. A wild joy begins to take hold of the people, their spirits uplifted by the promise of revelations to come. The heavens grow light. Blue velvet turns to transparent azure. A bright pigment of pink is washed across the sky as the orb of the sun approaches the horizon. Still in silence, those assembled at the sanctuary proceed down the giant serpentine avenue of stones. The time is right. They move along as if carried by a powerful current of energy that bathes them in an irresistible magnetism, drawing them to the sacred center. Vast stones, alive in the changing light, wait to welcome them. At the henge, they pass between two enormous monoliths that mark the boundary and are joined by others flowing in from different directions. A small group gathers around the obelisk. The atmosphere intensifies as all eyes turn towards the reddening sky, the landscape becoming vivid in the reflected glow. As if all assembled are but one great being, arms spontaneously outstretched towards the coming sun. The tension is creating a crescendo. There is a flash on the horizon, and in the distance, yellow flames leap skyward, and tiny figures can be glimpsed, silhouetted against a flickering fire burning on a hill to the northeast. Then the sun rises in splendor directly behind it, its first rays striking the faces of the people in the henge, their eyes filled with an overwhelming joy, a collective gasp and awe. Awe is involuntarily uttered, breaking the silence. Simultaneously behind them to the southwest, another fire is kindled. It explodes into life just before the first shaft of sunlight moves across the countryside to touch it. And far down into the west, a giant chain of fires is sparked across the land, each one in succession, drawing the light from the sun as if by some powerful alchemical resonance. The other sacred centers spread their fires across the landscape, forming a straight line from coast to coast, an alignment illuminated and echoed by the rays of the sun god as he returns on the first day of summer to stimulate and excite the elements of the earth goddess. The cycle is complete. The goddess is fertilized by the god. The fruits of their seed will flourish, but there is more. The fusion creates an enchantment over the land. Energies and forces within the body of the goddess react to this cosmic coupling after months of frigidity and purification when life was suspended by winter. Her secret centers are filled with ecstasy. The channels and currents then link them, cleansed and revitalized. The power that animates the countryside flows again in rhythmical pulses as the heart of the solar system pumps vitality into its veins and arteries. The creatures of the earth, seen and unseen, rejoiced. Bathed in the afterglow of reunion, they celebrate in innocent enthusiasm the restoration of earthly harmony. I found that particularly stirring, and I'm hoping that this will revitalize your memory, because you were there. You might not have been there in England. You could have been in Peru, South America, at some point along these lines where the fires were built. You were there. That memory is in your storehouse of memories. It is just waiting for you to tap into it. Now, what I did is I did a reading about this information. And I went to the Earth records because I wanted to find out more about this. Who were these early people? Why did they do this? Why was it that they could see and hear and feel this energy and we cannot? And so, this is the reading. I'm not going to read the whole thing because it's long. I'm going to read parts of it because the book of Earth Activities concerning the history of energy and how it was created on the Earth plane and interacts with solar flares and planetary positions is a very large book. And so I'm just going to read a small section of it because the file is very large. And we're going to be reading about the Fire Festival in particular. It's a subsection of Earth energies. And what I read from Hamish Miller's book, this is what he was talking about in particular, the Fire Festival. If you look on my information for the show today, there is an energy picture that came from Hamish Miller's book, and it shows the Mary Michael line, and it shows the energy as it moves around Asbury in England. And that is the site that Archangel Michael told us last week is where there was a PowerPoint. So along those lines, there are PowerPoints. And this is where the lines cross one another, such as on that page. And I'm just going to read you the points that I found were interesting. And this came from the reading. The ancients, and we find that this activity was connected to those who fled the Atlantis thinking, were well aware of the energy groundwork between the layers of energy bands between the sun and the earth and between the sun and other cosmic forces. In the beginning, these were very advanced individuals who fled the island and only could take a small amount of records and personal possessions from their previous country. Some of the tribes from Atlantis were carried by boat to what you would call Greece and came through the land from that direction and fanned out to the far reaches of the continent as they were not received very well and fought groups in Greece. Solon gathered these records, and there is mention of Plato documenting this conflagration. We had to give this dissertation as it was necessary to understand the nature of the people of whom you speak. These were the early people, since their technology was lost. They had to use the energy bands of the sun when it was most influential in the land, and they understood the four points of the greatest energy influx. Now, what they're talking about here is the four periods of time that is the solstices and the equinox, though there was energy that comes to Earth every moon, period, according to the cycles of the moon also, but these were the greatest energy influxes. They could see the energy lines, and they could see the power between the solar expressive energy and the receiving bands of line within the Earth. Since they had no technology, now remember this was a little bit different in Atlantis because they had the giant crystals that they were working with. And what the reading is saying, since they had no technology, they used the physical body as the receptacle for this energy. This was a very diluted form of the energy that they were accustomed to working with as they had no crystals then. But they understood the crystalline composition of the core of the Earth and the crystalline structure of stone and mountains and hills. It was this energy that fired their heating systems and lamp systems. They had this ability, and it was used with mind power alone and the energy from the earth and the sun. This was later lost as their descendants lost the power of the mind as it wasn't understood, and their priests didn't pass this information down to the followers, and it eventually fell from use. We talked to Carol Haywood about this, and she was saying that in this period of time, this would be when the third eye was no longer open, that it actually fell into disuse. And so the reading continues. What was carried on was just a memory of the fire rituals from their forefathers. The sun at these powerful periods brought energy that was cosmic, and the fires built upon earth were magnetic. The priests understood how to unite the two forces and collect this energy in the pituitary gland and use this for personal power for healing and regenerating of the physical. They managed to live to very advanced ages until the ability was lost. Now, there is a connection between the Templars and this information of the ley lines and the fire festivals. And I brought this subject up also about the Templars because I remember being a Templar several times, and I was aware of the energy uses that the Templars used. And we're going to, after we get through this period in Britain, we're going to be talking about this with regards to how this was used in France by the Templars. And so this, we have a paragraph here that alludes to that. And I'm linking in these two periods of time because it's the same information, but it's used a little differently. Now, as you might be aware, the Templars uncovered records that were deposited in Jerusalem. And we're aware that the early Templars made their way to Jerusalem at Solomon's Temple to retrieve these records. And that whole story is a very fascinating story, and that is probably going to be the next segment that we're going to get into with this information. And so when the Templars came back with the information from Jerusalem to France, they had contacts in Britain, and they could see that this knowledge had a common thread, so to say, and that it was from the same source. They realized that here were records that were found and were deposited in the temple site, and here were the remains of a group of people who understood these records. So the first part is referring to the information that was deposited in Jerusalem, and the second refers to these ancient people who understood the knowledge, these people that were talking at this very ancient time in Britain that did this building. However, by the time the Templars found the information in Britain, the ancient people had already died out, and they were left with just the remains of evidence from stone markers and energy lines. Now, the Templars understood the energy lines, and we'll get into that because one of the knights who actually led that group of Templars into Jerusalem was living on one of these power areas in France, and so he was born with this. He learned at a very early age that there was something special in the ground and how to work with it. So you might say he kind of had a jump start on this whole situation. And so he worked with that, and he had an understanding of these power spots. So there was somewhat of a memory of sorts when these two groups of people actually cross one another energy-wise. Now, I had a question about healing, and what the reading said is that healing can be accomplished during these periods if knowledge as to how this was done can be resurfaced, and this is possible today. And, of course, this is the reason why we're exploring this, because this comes from a period of time when the priests and priestesses worked with this energy. They knew how to combine it, they knew how to work with it and how to heal the people, and this is available and available to be resurfaced now, and this is why we're going in this direction. And so we're now moving. This is just a little blurb about the Gothic cathedrals and how the Templars used this information, but they didn't really teach healing in this manner, except for a very few within the circle. They didn't use the fire, but rather the open vaults of the cathedral acted as a collection point of the magnetics that came forth from the earth. And if you've been in a Gothic cathedral, or even just seen pictures of it, you'll notice that this vault that is inside is a very important part of the cathedral. So the Templars, instead of using the fires, they were using the vaults of the cathedral to gather this energy. And we'll get into this later because it's just fascinating how this was to work. So the ley lines do not have the same accumulation of energy as some of the other places where the energy comes to the surface. So the places in France where they were building these Gothic cathedrals, this energy of the magnetics from the earth was very close to the surface, and so they built these cathedrals on these spots. And of course they were very ancient spots where the previous people, such as the Druids, worked with this and understood it, and you might say these were already working centers of sanctity as they understood the energy. And then the Templars came in and took that over, but we're all really talking about basically the same kind of work. And they happened to mention Chartres Cathedral, which is right outside of Paris. And I've been there, and this is an extraordinary place, and we will discuss how the spires, why the spires were placed where they were placed, and how they were usually placed over top of water that was subterranean. And in Chartres, you stand at a certain doorway underneath a spire, and it is there that the one collects the cosmic force coming down from the sky, and the electromagnetic force as it comes up from the base of the cathedral. You stand there, and these two forces meet one another right at the heart chakra. In other words, the distance between the spire at the very tip of the spire down to the doorway is the same distance as the bottom of the well underneath of that doorway to the heart chakra. Those distances are the same. And so I think we'll get into that more in detail. I am hoping that as we read that you realize that you were a part of this at some point in your past, maybe not in England, but certainly if it wasn't there, you would have been part of understanding this knowledge base of the cosmic energies as they come from the cosmos and the electromagnetic energies as they come from Earth. You participated in this in some manner. And let's hope that what we went through today, that it will be the beginning of bringing forth some of these memories, because what we're going to also work with in the future, hopefully, is to be able to bring back the memory of how to use this for healing. And so, dear friends, this is the part of the show that I have devoted to this information. And then we're going to ask our kind elves at the radio station if they would be kind enough to bring on our guests today. Absolutely. If they are so willing to press the right button.
Yes, absolutely. In fact, we're going to go on a break here for just 2 minutes while we get our guest online. Stay with us, folks.
Good afternoon, friends. We are back with you for the second half. And I would like to introduce someone to you. You know her name. So what I'm going to do, since you are so tuned into this lady, Marcia, tell us who you are, dear.
How are you? I'm great. It's great to hear your voice again, Carolyn. Your show was absolutely riveting. I was totally glued to my computer listening to it.
Oh, I'm so happy.
Well, you know, I just watched a fascinating program on the Templars just last night. So, you know, and again, this is all because of the Da Vinci Code coming out.
Oh, yes.
This connects directly into a lot of my work with art history, of course, you know.
Uh-huh.
And another way to, of course, remember those memories I have found personally is in, you know, the slide format and the other formats that I'm using. I just instantly go back to these places in time, and it's fantastic, you know.
It really is fantastic. And one of the things that Archangel Michael told us about this is that, and I'm not sure if it was on last week's show or the week before, that we actually go back to these places in our dreams, that these sacred sites are a part of our psyche. In other words, they have been so important to us over the past that subconsciously we remember these and we actually visit these places at night because of the energetics there.
That
makes
sense
to you?
Pardon me?
I said, does that make sense
oh,
to
yeah.
you that
I
you visit them at night?
I completely concur with that idea, Carolyn. I do. Although, as I say, for me, it tends to be a little more conscious because in teaching art history in Egypt and so on, it's whenever I look at the art, it's like I'm right there. But I do know the power of the European cathedrals to instantly get, in some of them, a very spiritual experience, you know, which is what I had when I was visiting Austria many years ago, too. So,
what did you visit in Austria?
I was a student at the time, and I was in Salzburg. In Austria, yeah.
Uh-huh.
And I ended up doing a lot of drawings of the churches and cathedrals and felt very drawn into them, you know. And that must be why. I mean, on a subconscious level anyway, I was absorbing that positive energy that you were speaking of and those PowerPoints, you know.
Well, there's another thing, too, which is very fascinating about these Gothic cathedrals is that the earth actually breathes energy. It has places, it has portals where the energy comes from the cosmos, goes inside the earth, and then comes out of the earth. And it is at these Gothic cathedrals where some are an intake of energy and some are exhaling it. And what is so fascinating, the reason I asked about Salisbury is I was at the Salisbury Cathedral. There is a cathedral named Salisbury Cathedral in England also. And
I said Salzburg, I'm sorry.
Salzburg, that's right.
Salzburg, Austria, yeah. But Salisbury Cathedral, yes, it is known for having, I think it's mentioned in the Da Vinci Code too, is it not?
I don't know because I didn't read the Da Vinci Code, but what I saw there, I was with several ladies, that is a place where the energy goes back into the cosmos from that cathedral, and you actually see it. I was just amazed because we were there at night, and there are no clouds of from companies and businesses. The sky is very clear. When you look in the sky there, I mean, you just see all the stars. It's one of those places where the air is very clear. And we could actually see this. It looked like a wisp of smoke. It was, except it was much finer than smoke. And you could see this go up into the sky. It came out of the center of the cathedral where, you know how cathedrals have two wings that cross over one another?
The apse and the transept, sure.
Yes. Mm-hmm. This is where the energy was coming out of, and we watched it go straight up. It was fascinating.
That's phenomenal, Carolyn. Now, let me ask you, I haven't been to Salisbury Cathedral in England, and nor have I been to Salisbury Plain. Are they linked? Because Salisbury Plain is where Stonehenge exists. Are they close by, do you remember?
I'm trying to think. I was not. See, we did a tour in a private vehicle, and I wasn't driving, and I wasn't looking at the maps.
Okay.
I really don't know, but I would say this, that that whole area is honeycombed with energy lines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and I'm not even sure if it matters if it is close to one another.
Well, you know, the same concept exists regardless of whether they're in the same proximity, but they share the same name, so that's why I asked the question. But many years ago, I did my master's work on pre-Celtic symbols in England and Ireland, which relates somewhat to the work you're doing with the ley lines, because these are the pre-Celtic peoples that built Stonehenge that connected
mm-hmm.
with all these lines. And I'll never forget the day that I finished my thesis. I sat it on a little rocking chair in my room, and it was like, I don't know how to, this is going to sound weird, but it's a lot like your experience with this ley line. All this powerful energy was starting to emanate from that paper I wrote. And it was like I was getting actually a little bit creeped from it, and I can't place my finger on what that was exactly. But those places contained magic and power and presence. There was just a presence about this. And even though my paper was more dealing with the ancient symbols that the pre-Celtic culture used, it was something ineffable. It was something powerful, but there was a presence in my room. This is way before I developed my ability to channel or
receive messages. Well, what I seem to think about that, Marcia, is the symbol itself. We forget that symbolism is very tied into sacred geometry, and there is a power to that. And so even though you don't consciously understand, or we as an individual does not consciously understand this, the symbol is working on a energy of a power line. And again, the ancients understood this. And if you are in some special places, it's not necessarily a cathedral, but like places out in the open. And I was in one in southern France, and it's called the Rollers. And you climb up on this hill, and there is a symbol in this seat that is carved right into this rock. And if you sit on that symbol, you literally can see the sacred geometry in thin red lines going from point to point.
Wow.
And so there is something about symbols that's very powerful.
Oh,
and
definitely.
I think you're probably very right. It was the symbols that you were working with that generated the energy.
And tell me if you know anything about the spiral, but I was fascinated with these carved spirals that the pre-Celtic culture used, and I was trying to figure out about that particular symbol, because it's totally, I guess it's unique to island culture and doesn't
it exist. Would be something that I would have to do a reading on that had to
yeah.
do with the Celtics in particular, but my personal experience, I have had personal experience with spirals, and spirals are used to bring in healing influences.
Mm-hmm. The other thing I want to associate with a spiral is infinity, because it starts and it keeps going and going.
Yeah.
And so in the thesis, I just said that they were possibly, an energy connection to infinity. But many of the things that happen in nature also, which corresponds with our Earth, are spiral in nature as well, like tornadoes and other things, wave action. So there's a lot of energy in a spiral, for sure.
Indeed.
So that is fascinating. You didn't happen to see the program that was on last night about the Templars?
No.
I would really recommend it to you. You'd probably be able to inform our audience a lot more about this than what they were able to decipher, but it was on the History Channel, and it was an excellent program. And I was thinking, I was thinking of you, because I read your other book on the Templars, and it was describing the nine knights that left from France and went to Jerusalem and found this buried treasure. And that in the documentary, they have no idea what was actually found. There's various theories about what they might have found, but they somehow managed to unearth great treasures and then come back to France, and then they were suddenly very well off. And then they became the builders, you know, for the great medieval cathedrals. So certainly they were carrying some secret knowledge of some kind.
People don't understand about the Templars is the Templars were very much like our military, and this concept is that information was only given to those on a need-to-know basis. And so you might have a monk, a Templar, he would have been a Templar, but what he did was tend the fields, grow vegetables, took care of the animals, the horses. He was a Templar, but he didn't know anything at all about the secret mysteries. And so there was level upon level upon level until you got to the very top. And in each one of the houses, there was only a handful of men, maybe a total of five. And these five people, they had to have at least four who would vote on a candidate to allow them to come into the deepest mystery. And so it was done this way because it was a time of persecution, for one thing, and they had to be very secretive because the things that they were working with was very much against what was accepted by the church at that time. And so they kept these things hidden. They had to, for their own safety. So there were just many, many levels of Templars.
And right, and they were, of course, after the Holy Grail, and then that is the big debate, you know, with the movie coming out. It's like part of our subconscious right now. We're being bombarded with it. But if you haven't read The Da Vinci Code, I still highly recommend it because it brings out a lot of the hidden truths about Christianity that have been long suppressed and too long suppressed. And I think the mass consciousness is ready to accept certain concepts in it that are being explored. And so, you know, even though it's a murder mystery, and I'm not much on murder mysteries.
Well, you know, this is the time of the divine feminine.
That's exactly it, yes.
And I think a lot of this is coming to the surface because of that. And this is an irresistible pull on human consciousness because for so long we have worked our way through perhaps the warring nature of the male, and now we're moving towards the compassion and loving soft nature of the female to bring the two and blend. And we have to do this if we're going to move on to beings of compassion.
Right, and you know, I think that certainly Princess Diana embodies all the divine feminine, you know, in the work that I'm doing too. So I applaud the advent of the goddess and the divine feminine as it's you know, bringing us into a greater awareness and consciousness. And I also think it's high time that women were given equal and fair stake in everything that we do in life. This has been an ongoing situation, you know, for many decades now in America. But still worldwide, that women need to be acknowledged for the gifts and the inspiration that they provide everywhere, you know. So
oh,
I think
in some parts of the world, it is just so sad how women are treated.
I know. I mean, in so many areas, they have to, well, for instance, Afghanistan and so on, they have to wear the burqa and they have to go around in all these robes and everything, and they're basically treated like property. I mean, we need to bring women into the 21st century completely and do away with a lot of these really outmoded religious ideas. And it's probably present in almost every form of religion, not just Muslim religion, obviously. There are certain, you know, forms of repression in the Catholic Church because they won't ordain women and so on and so on. But, you know, I'm not sure we're going to get a reformation of all the world's religions, Carol, but I think the main thing, and at least in my work, too, with Diana, is the emphasis on living in oneness and respect for one's religious faith tradition while embracing the idea of spiritual oneness. And if we move into spiritual oneness, then we kind of have to move away from religion, how I see it at this point, you know.
Well, I think these words get very confusing to people, the words religion, the words dogma, the words spirit, to be spiritual. And many times we take one word and cover all those ideas. But I asked you to come today and give Diana's viewpoint on what is going on in the Middle East, and Iran in particular. We have individuals from different countries who are rattling the sabers of war,
right.
Talking about threats with their nuclear superiority. And I was hoping that perhaps Diana had some thoughts on what is going on now with that issue.
Well, indeed she does. And, of course, as an ascended master and a person who's watching the Middle East in particular, she has one really powerful message that I could read some excerpts of concerning the mounting tensions there in the Middle East, and particularly with regard to Iran, and what we need to do to hold off a possible nuclear confrontation. So I can read the entire message. I think it probably takes about 5 minutes if we have that amount of time.
We have that time. It's
okay.
We've got about 10. We've got maybe 7 minutes.
Okay. Well, I'll go and I'll skip the first part, and I'm coming in with Diana speaking here, and she says, first of all, I wish to say this situation in the Middle East needs your urgent attention. That the situation there is building tension, that if all were able to simply write to congressmen and women, we could totally prevent a terrorist attack upon your beautiful country, America. The situation is really all about Israel and Palestine, and I cannot be more emphatic that unless something is done to assist the Palestinians, there will be more terror upon your country. My channel has the answers to the dilemma which face all of you. You may trust her words as they are true, and from me, Diana, Princess of Peace. I say Princess of Peace now because that is the role assigned to me by the spiritual hierarchy with whom my channel also works. For those looking upon your world, we can see a better world where children are fed and wars and killing are things of the past. It is not hard to conceive such a world if one has the heart to know its possibility and the will to do little things for the good of all. When I lived among you as Diana, Princess of Will, it was always my greatest pleasure to serve the greater good in little ways. Sometimes those little things, like the holding the hand of a dying child or being present at the bedside, were all that I could do then. Things in this world seem to be spiraling out of control, and we as guides and masters to the human race want to redirect the negative energies of this planet to those of good. For now the time of ascension is upon the planet, and in order to have ascension, we must first have peace. While peace remains a lofty ideal, I assure you that if you have pen and paper or a computer, you may do something, even today, for peace. This is my request, that you write a congressman and ask that more be done to assist the Palestinian-Israeli peace effort. If you do this one thing, it will be a groundswell of action that can happen. Marcia, you are on a roll with this today, Diana. Thank you. I assume there is more. Diana, of course, and you must understand the urgency of my plea. We do see outcomes over here, and we know this one method will work when others have failed. We also want to address the growing tensions in Iran. That president has nuclear intentions upon Israel, and he made this clear in his many speeches. The international community cannot let this madman have any nuclear power, for he will enrich uranium to bomb standards, and we confirm he is already working on this. We ask again others in your diplomatic corps to meet with him, and we find his letter this week a very interesting thing. We feel it contains more than the news than was willing to admit on television, and that there were both threats and offers contained in that letter. That if there is to be peace, he must be met head-on in negotiations, not ignored, for he knows his power, and he will not fail to use it on innocent Israelis. The entire situation revolves around the actions of both him and Israel. If both countries do anything to stir the pot, the possibility of nuclear holocaust is indeed great. We have only our diplomats to solve this dilemma, and again, I ask all to write congressmen and ask for more diplomacy throughout the Middle East. We want the roadmap, and we want a diplomatic solution to the hot Iranian situation, which could blow up at any time. I am closing. I want to confirm this transmission of light is from the light worker Diana and is a way out of the dilemma of nuclear war and contamination of your beautiful planet. If this resonates with you, please share this message with a friend. I thank you for listening. I am Diana, Queen of Hearts and Princess of Peace. So those are her thoughts on the whole Middle East, but in particular on Iran. And she is asking that we not ignore his letter and that we not ignore what he is putting out there, because he's been putting out a lot of insanity. I'm wondering, Carolyn, are you getting anything from, like, Archangel Michael or any of your guides concerning this threat and how we might, as lightworkers, best address this?
Well, if I have a particular question, I pose that question and somebody will come forth, like Archangel Michael or Pope John Paul or Caesar, someone will come forth and answer it, or else I will go directly to the Earth records and get that information. But an answer, and I haven't asked about that particular question. However, in past messages that didn't have to do with that particular question, but allowing the world to happen according to how we wish to build it, this message came forth from Archangel Michael. And actually, I believe Pope John Paul has spoken of this also. And they tell us that there is energy that comes from the cosmos, and it comes to Earth, and it goes through a bend, a 90-degree turn, and it is at that point that energy comes into form. It comes into form either by way of things that we have created or things that we wish to happen, and that it is at that point that human mind power can help construct this activity to the way we want it. And so they have given meditations to use so that we can influence this energy that's coming through.
Now, excuse me, we have to start closing her down.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I didn't realize we were five of.
Yeah, not a problem.
Okay. Well, Marcia,
thank you
as
for
always,
having me.
It's difficult to stop, darling, but Time Master has come.
It was nice chatting with you, Carolyn.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you, too, for your work. All right. I'll talk to you again soon. Bye now.
Goodbye, Marcia, and goodbye to our friends.
Mm-hmm.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.